Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Jason Ruggiero, because Andy Burdick is not in the studio today. He's joining us on the telephone.
Via phone line, I am. I'm very happy to be here, and it's kind of interesting to be on this end, listening to you hosting today, Jason.
How does it feel? I'm in charge.
It's weird.
I almost had a Ron Burgundy moment because I have your notes in front of me and it says, I'm your host, Andy Burdick. But anyways, we're also joined by Dr. Garrett.
It's great to be back.
Back in the studio. We're happy to have him.
Truly an honor.
No.
We are thrilled to have you back, Dr. Garrett.
The honor is all ours.
It's been a nice little hiatus, but I'm glad to be back.
You're all rested up after a long off season.
That's right. A very long off season. So long, we're back in season.
You missed the off season completely. Just straight back to the season. That's the way to do it, man. Let me tell you what. Okay. Well, I don't remember what we were going to talk about. Oh, Tommy John surgery. We thought that since we have Dr. Garrett here, we'd let him weigh in on the Tommy John epidemic that's raging through baseball right now.
So probably a week or two ago, Andy texted me a question about ligament and tendon injuries on players who are juicing using performance-enhancing drugs.
No one does that.
And, not in baseball, not anymore.
And what my research showed was the use of specifically androgenic anabolic steroids. If you do any search on the internet about performance-enhancing drugs, you're going to see AAS, androgenic anabolic steroids, testosterone.
Now I understand.
And what happens is testosterone acts on metabolically active tissues like muscle to increase strength and performance. What happens is this exceeds the tensile strength of the tendons. And so you do, in fact, see an increase of tendon injury while using these drugs. Now, human growth factor is a little bit different. It acts on tendons and ligaments as well, so you don't see the rates of injury with those. And what this all is getting at is, are we seeing more injuries? Are the injuries more severe? And what's causing this? And the big thing is Tommy John surgery. This is, you know, a season-ending operation for players. And why, you know, before we were seeing maybe 14 or 16 in a year, now we're already at that this season. So a few theories I have on that. Number one is we have set expectations in baseball. If we look at speeds, they're, you know, what were they 20 years ago compared to now?
Right.
And so we're forcing, these pitchers are forced to produce, and it was by, you know, some players, by the use of these performance-enhancing drugs. And I think now it's strength training, pitching practice. These guys are being worked a lot harder, I think, and pushing their bodies a lot further than they used to. So you're seeing injuries more common because of that. I think some of it may be mechanics. I'm not really going to get into that a whole lot, but that may be one of the factors. And then, to me, it's kind of like coronary stents.
All right.
There was a time where not everybody got a coronary stent. Now today, if you go to the hospital with chest pain or discomfort anywhere 6 feet within your chest, you're going to get a stent.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of these pitchers are coming off, you know, with these sore elbows. They're going to these physicians who do well doing these surgeries,
yeah,
both technically, you know, these surgeries have a pretty good success rate. And financially, these physicians are doing very well because of these surgeries. So I think the threshold to do a Tommy John is a lot lower in the 2014 season than it was in 2000.
That's interesting. And the other the points I would add is, you know, you're talking about 20 years ago. Well, almost 20 years ago exactly, in 95, the Indians were playing the Braves in the World Series. And the Braves had an amazing rotation of Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz. I don't think any of those guys threw over 95.
Right. And now that's...
I mean, you know today, Greg Maddux wouldn't even get a second look from a scout. They'd be like, oh, no, he doesn't throw hard enough.
Well, looking at Rodriguez, they're saying his velocities are down. He's throwing mid to high 80s.
Yeah.
You know, that was an average 20 years ago.
Well, and too, like... I think you have a lot of guys as starters right now. Danny Salazar comes to mind. Their stuff, like the location of their stuff is not good. Like Greg Maddux would laugh his head off if he watched a Danny Salazar start. But he'd also sit there and say, I could never throw that hard and I could never get away with that many mistakes. Like we look at how many mistakes Danny Salazar gets punished for. But if Greg Maddux made that many mistakes, it would be twice as bad because he's throwing 90 miles an hour.
Right.
And, you know, like, I mean, when I was a kid and Randy Johnson would pitch, it was like, holy cow, I've never seen anyone throw like that. Now, every team has a starter like that, and every team has three or four guys in their bullpen that can throw upper 90s.
Mm-hmm. So, What I think another issue is these guys aren't rehabbing quite the way they should be. I think the rehab is going to have to be one of those things looked at because now we're getting into an era where we have guys who are having their second Tommy John.
Right. That's not good.
And you're going to see more of that. You're going to see more of these guys in the next 5 years having repeat Tommy John surgeries. And so I think that lends itself to... looking at the mechanics of pitching, the rehab following these, and the pitching practice.
Anything to add, Andy?
No, you guys pretty much got it all. Good work today.
I guess the final thing we'll say is Garrett and I both have up a little list from the source is baseballheatmaps.com, but the article's on ESPN. It's written by Jason Stark, I believe. And it has the Tommy John surgeries by team from the years 2010 to 2014. And the leader with 8 surgeries in that span is the Braves. And then the Athletics and Diamondbacks each have 7. Dodgers with 6. Goes on down the list. The Indians come in at 4. The Pirates at 2. The Rays and Reds have only had 1. And the Brewers with the goose egg. So... the Brewers' pitching and strength and conditioning program is probably going to be the source of a lot of study by those teams at the top of the list. But all right, I think that kind of wraps up the intro. Dr. Garrett's here, so we're going to start off with the injury news and find out who's being wheeled into the emergency room as we speak.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm not a doctor yet, but I play one on the internet. All right, well, we're going to start off in Cleveland with a very short list.
All right.
Technically, he's not even on the DL yet.
No, Jason Kipnis is not on the DL yet. But, breaking news from sources.
Oh, boy.
Jose Ramirez will be in Cleveland tomorrow. It's not confirmed that it was Kipnis who will be moved out.
Okay.
And there is some, you know, some people there who could be getting the boot other than Kipnis, but that definitely means that Jason Kipnis is not going to be playing in the next week or so.
That sets him up for... So he left last Tuesday's game against the Angels in the fourth inning with a right abdominal strain. And this was following his second at-bat.
Right.
This was this a check swing?
It was a weak swing, kind of weak contact. And then he grounded into a double play and just kind of jogged to first. And Kipnis is not the kind of person that jogs
right.
even on an easy double play ball. So everyone knew something was wrong.
He said it felt like somebody just punched him in the just right in the back, like it knocked the breath out of him.
Yeah, so he said it knocked the wind out of him.
So, you know, that if he does go on, I don't... It probably wouldn't be a bad idea
yeah.
for them to put him on the DL, but... I really don't think there's any concern there.
Well, here's the other thing, too. By putting him on the DL, regardless of who Jose Ramirez is coming up for, if Ramirez is coming up for Kipnis, great. That means they're going to put him on the DL, just backdate it to whenever the whole issue started.
Yeah.
But if they're calling up Ramirez to replace somebody and they're going to, you know, either option down or DFA or whatever they're going to do, if they don't put Kipnis on the DL, they're playing one man down for whatever period of time they're going to sit Kipnis for. If at this point you know you're calling up Ramirez so Kipnis can sit for the rest of the week, you put him on the DL so you can backdate it, get
right.
him back whenever he's fully healthy, and then
you
call somebody else up to take his spot.
Right. The only flip side of that would be if you really don't think he's going to miss 15 days.
Yeah,
you know.
Right.
They obviously feel like they can get by with a short bench because they've been doing it for the last 2 years. And that might be... That's the only thing. That could be... CC Lee could be getting shipped down as the eighth man in the bullpen just to get an extra bench guy for now. But that's also fluid because they need to bring up another starter because they put Carrasco in the bullpen. So something needs to happen here. And that's kind of...
yeah,
we can get into that later when
he's
I talk about
kind of
the
been
Indians.
In a slump.
Well,
he was ejected.
He was ejected for arguing balls and strikes. That was a couple weeks ago, but it hasn't improved. There's a lot of people that are like, and I'm kind of in this camp of like, okay, he's ailing. These side injuries can be lingering. Mm-hmm. Let's put him on the DL. Jose Ramirez is a much better defender at second base, and our defense is awful right now. It gets Kipnis out of the three hole. Francona doesn't have to look like he's getting Kipnis out of the three hole because he's not doing well. But we'll see if they actually make the official move or if this is like the first of a chain of events. But is that it?
That's it for Cleveland.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys got off easy.
Nice and easy. Now
I guess, although it's our all-star second baseman.
Well, where the sun isn't shining as bright in Three Rivers, let's start with Liriano. He, just to kind of update a little bit, he had some issues at the season open with some groin tightness, which it seemed like he got over just fine. And then he left last Saturday's game. This was on April 26th. Due to some flu-like symptoms. That's the term everyone was throwing around. Flu-like symptoms and dizziness. Which, you know, the weather hasn't been the greatest in western Pennsylvania, and that's not inconceivable. But it was later revealed that he had a pretty massive nosebleed prior to this.
Wow.
And then he goes on to say that he gets these pretty frequently, and he doesn't really know why.
Now, I get nosebleeds sometimes, but I'm not paid millions of dollars and have, like, a medical staff that will do an MRI at the drop of a hat.
So I'm sure he's been worked up, but if someone were to come to me and say, I have big nosebleeds that last a long time and I get them very frequently... That is sinister.
Oh, no, Andy.
That's not good.
So, in the fact that nothing more has been said about it tells me it's probably nothing. Because he does have a medical staff behind him, and a blood test for them is nothing.
Right. So, and I mean,
I'm sure he's been worked up.
He's got probably so many MRIs and...
Yeah, and blood tests, and I'm sure he's been worked up and run through the mill. So it's probably just the way he is.
Maybe he's like me and he just got his nose broke a lot as a kid.
So we'll follow that and see what goes on.
So Liriano, for the most part, should be okay then. Nothing too concerning with Liriano.
No, I expect a good prognosis for Liriano.
But when he comes out to that next start with that wad of toilet paper shoved up his nose, don't be surprised.
Yeah.
So who's next on the Pirates triage list?
Next, we're going to talk about Jason Grilli, who was placed on the 15 DL on the 25th, retroactive to the 21st, for a left oblique strain. same thing as Kipnis, actually. I really don't think this is going to be anything. I imagine he'll make an unremarkable recovery.
Unremarkable?
Unremarkable is good.
That's good. Grilled cheese.
A little more concerning is Wandy Rodriguez.
Oh, poor Wandy.
Oh, he was concerning today in Erie.
Yeah,
he started the 11:05 game of the first game of the doubleheader today.
He done get lit up.
So I think
was not good.
I think he's going to be the only major league pitcher who will have pitched from the DL. he's having some right knee issues right now. He was placed on DL April 21st. It turns out he had what's called arthrocentesis.
Arthritis.
Arthrocentesis is when they put a knee into the joint capsule and drain fluid that's on there.
Put a needle? You said knee.
A needle into the knee, into the joint capsule. Now, this is done for two reasons. One, it's therapeutic. When you get swelling in the knee, you get fluid, and that causes a lot of pain and inflammation. And the second reason it's done is it's diagnostic. It can tell you if you have an infection, you know, what type of inflammation, what's causing this inflammation. Hopefully it is just arthritis.
How ugly the fluid that they took out is.
Right. If they find blood in it, that would suggest a more serious injury to one of the ligaments, perhaps, in the knee. He also had an MRI, and both of those we didn't hear a whole lot about, so I'm assuming that means they were negative.
And negative describes his start today in Erie.
I would say negative describes the general sentiment surrounding Wandy Rodriguez and his tenure in Pittsburgh.
So, do you think, especially after that poor start today, that they'll be like, yeah, let's just try that again in 5 days?
I think your knee probably hurts a little more than you think it does, Wandy.
Oh, no. They're going to give him the... what was that guy last year they came up with an injury for the Pirates? They banished him?
Oh, yeah.
He was good the year before.
Oh, Carson?
No.
Daniel McCutcheon?
Yeah, Daniel McCutcheon.
Yeah, yep.
Look at Daniel McCutcheon.
Well, it's actually...
He's getting McCutcheon.
They're similar.
Uh-oh.
They're real similar.
You hear that?
I don't know. This takes me back to September last year,
mm-hmm.
when he had all these arm and elbow issues.
Yeah.
And like we were saying earlier, his velocities are way down. And so that, you know, that makes you wonder what, he had the whole off season. He had spring training and they were saying, you know, he pitched one inning, two innings, three innings, bullpen sessions. They all went well. And now this.
Now this.
I'm not saying the axe is being sharpened.
Uh-oh.
But there's a good chance.
But they're loading the cannons, man.
Yeah. So, All right, so Wandy, we know Wandy's just going to be Wandy. We're probably just going to have to live with the fact that we're just eating a salary in Pittsburgh, and that is what it is. But what about Russell Martin, who was a really, really important contributor on the Pirates roster last season?
So, yeah, he left the game Friday, April 25th, from some left hamstring pain. Oh, this was during the check swing. He got this hamstring pain. They did the MRI, which didn't really show anything. He was placed on the 15-day DL before Saturday's game, the 26th. The MRI showed just a strain, nothing too serious. And he got a platelet-rich plasma injection. We were talking about a little earlier before the show. The reason why they do these is because platelets produce growth factor, which helps promote healing in the area. And so the docs have caught on that if you can derive a solution that's heavy in these platelets and inject it, it increases or decreases recovery time. What's a little more concerning with Martin is he started complaining of some hip pain. So they also did an MRI of the hip, and we haven't really heard anything about that.
Hip pain from an old person who squats a lot.
Yeah.
Not good.
Not really a good sign. So,
relatively old, of course, but...
You know, he's on the 15-day. We'll follow it and see what happens. May not be anything.
Hopefully not. He was a really integral part of our success last season.
Yeah.
So it'd be good to get him back. Although I have to say Tony Sanchez has been playing admirably in Russell Martin's absence so far. So
Russell Martin's hip didn't seem to be bothering him when he sprinted out of the dugout to get a shot at Carlos Gomez a few weeks.
No, it is fine.
He seemed pretty spry.
Yeah. I have a feeling his hip would be fine now if that were to happen again.
He's like, go ahead, suspend me. I'm on the disabled list. Throw me out of the game, whatever.
Is that all from the triage? Or do you have any more bad
news? That's all I can come up with for you, Andy.
Just your starting catcher, your closer, and your highest paid pitcher.
That's all.
I don't want to beat you up too bad on my first day back.
Thanks for taking it easy on me there, Doc.
All right. Well, that wraps up the... triage unit. So I think first we're going to go to Cleveland, where a team that's just hanging on has started to lose their grip. They were 11-11 the last time we did a podcast, and today they are 11-17. They headed out west, and the left coast was not kind to them. They got swept by the Giants and the Angels, and I can boil this down for you pretty simply, and if anybody is watching the Indians games, I'm sure you're on the same page with me. I'm going to be blunt. This team stinks, and they stink for three reasons. And when I say stink, I mean presently, you know?
Right.
I'm not like one of those people that writes on the Plain Dealer comment section that...
This is the worst Cleveland team ever,
and it's never going to be good till Dolan sells, because Dolans are cheap and all that other crap they spew. This team stinks right now, and it stinks for three reasons. One, they have bad starting pitching. They finally booted Carrasco, which I have mixed feelings about, but you got to do something. And he... As much as he was probably being victimized by the horrible defense, which is one of the other reasons they stink, he wasn't doing himself any favors. He wasn't demonstrating any kind of improved control. And it doesn't matter that you throw 98 miles an hour. If you throw it straight and down the middle of the plate, it's going to get socked. So they put him in the bullpen. There's a lot of people who think that's going to... be good for him. I'm not convinced about that, but they booted.
Let me ask you this: Why are you not convinced of that? Because it seems like Carlos Carrasco is the type of player, and there's nothing wrong with this. He seems like the type of player that would be a good bullpen type pitcher. I mean, a guy that you could bring out late in the innings. He throws heat. We know that. The fastball has got, you know, there's no problem with that. He's got great swinging strike rates with the fastball.
Well, two reasons. One, and he showed it last night. They put him in last night. They were losing like 5-1. And McAllister had to start on 3 days rest to pick up the slack for Carrasco to kind of reorder the rotation. He didn't fare too well. So they put Carrasco in, and you'd think at that point, okay, he can probably finish the game and save the bullpen. Now, he was throwing 98 most of the time because he figured, well, I don't have to save my bullets. Who knows how long I'm going to be out here. I'm going to throw as hard as I can. But that 98-mile-an-hour fastball, straight as an arrow, was getting punched all around the outfield. Michael Bourne was like, he like called timeout, had to come in and get a water bottle because he was so tired from chasing that ball around. So that's my one problem. He can throw hard, but he's not – he doesn't have any deception. And I know that's what Mickey Callaway, he tried, he was puzzled all offseason. He said, I don't understand how a guy who throws this hard gets hit so hard. But I think it's because it's just straight and he doesn't have good control. And the second reason I am worried about him in the bullpen is he does not do well in pressure situations. That's when he has trouble, is when he gets guys on base, all of a sudden it goes to crap real quick. And I'm sorry, but a guy in the bullpen who I can't bring in unless the bases are empty is not exactly my ideal bullpen guy.
Here's the flip side of that too. Think about this. Maybe you move him to the bullpen. Maybe you work on, you know, from the bullpen, get rid of his lineup. Simplify everything for him. You only have him throwing from the stretch. You know, you're taking away that component of having to change deliveries, you know, when there's runners on, you know, versus when there's not runners on. He's got that plus fastball that plays well. He's got a nasty slider, and he's got, you know, arguably a plus changeup as well. I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, even if you eliminated one of his pitches, still has good enough stuff to come out of the bullpen for one inning for you and dominate. I think moving Carrasco to the bullpen, I don't look at it as a demotion. I look at it as putting a player where he fits best on a roster.
I think that it doesn't really have anything to do with, like, moving from the windup to the stretch. I think it has more to do with the fact that right now and for the last 4 years, he has been mentally not very strong. Like, he does not do well when he gets into trouble, and I'm not sure that that's really going to change when he's in the bullpen. I mean, I think he might have some good outings, but I think he's going to hurt you. I mean, look at last night. Again, they're already getting killed. It's like, just go out there and throw the ball over the plate, and he is getting hit around so hard they had to pull him. I mean, if there was ever a moment where there was no pressure, it was last night. You entered the game already losing by 4 runs. You were getting, like, totally skunked by CJ Wilson. And he still can't get out. I mean, I don't think he pitched more than an inning last night. Maybe it was like an inning and a third or something. But yeah. I'm not enthusiastic about him in any role. And I think, you know, we'll probably see Bauer come up to replace him. I would be surprised if they bring up Tomlin, because Bauer's hot right now. And they need a front-of-the-line person. They don't need a back-of-the-line filler, because Justin Masterson's struggling. He has reduced velocity, and no one's really coming up with any reasons why. And one start from Danny Salazar is not enough to make me feel better. He made plenty of mistakes. The Giants, I think, maybe were, you know, it was the first time they'd seen him, and I think they were a little easier to exploit than, say, like when he's going to go up against the White Sox or the Tigers, and they've seen him 2 or 3 times already. So the starting pitching needs to improve, but that's not even the biggest problem. And number two is that they don't have any good offensive players right now, and that's not the biggest problem, but we'll get to the big problem. Number two, though, their offense stinks right now. Outside of Bourne, Murphy, and Chisenhall, pretty much everyone else is looking pretty rough. Santana and Swisher are kind of picking it up, but they're going to have to do more, especially if Jason Kipnis is out. Now think about that for a minute. Bourne, Murphy, and Chisenhall. That's who's doing well. If I had told you that at the beginning of the season, that our best hitters would be Bourne, Murphy, and Chisenhall, you would have thought I was insane. You would have said, I know you love Murphy, and I know you love Chisenhall, but Michael Bourne, come on. Even you can't defend that. And that's all they have. They got David Murphy out there. Ryan Rayburn is supposed to be a lefty killer. And last night he's in there, he's getting skunked by CJ Wilson. And David Murphy, who's left-handed, is the only one to drive in a run last night against CJ Wilson. Some people, you know, they want guys like Ramirez, who we now know, at least through rumor, is coming tomorrow. We're not sure who's going out, but he'll be in Cleveland. And other people want Jesus Aguilar. I mean, the roster construction, you know, is a problem to get those guys up. I don't think they're ready to cut bait on somebody like Giambi or something like that in order to get Aguilar. But my whole thing is, I don't think Ramirez and Aguilar are enough. I mean, when Michael Brantley, Nick Swisher, Yan Gomes, Rayburn, Carlos Santana, all those guys are struggling. That's your team. I mean, when you look at it and you're like, Swisher, Santana, Kipnis, and Brantley are struggling. The Indians aren't going to win any games at that point.
Right. I mean,
that's their team. You can't replace everyone. You just have to hope that these guys come out of it. And for most of them, they will come out of it. They have track records. Like, you're already seeing it with Santana and even a little with Swisher. The person who kind of worries me is Yan Gomes, because he's just like lost in every facet of the game. Like, I wonder if like Carlos Santana has to like show him where his locker is, because he can't hit and his fielding is still awful, Andy. Like, he would do better if he just, when someone tried to steal, he just threw the ball directly to Michael Bourne. Because Michael Bourne could get it and maybe throw it to third before the person could get up and take another base.
The defenses have been alarming with Yan Gomes, particularly because that was considered one of his strengths,
right,
coming into the season. And you know, even through most of last season, he was an above-average defensive catcher. But then you look at Carlos Santana, kind of like you said, there's no doubt Santana's going to turn around. He's been hitting the baseball hard all season.
Yes.
He still is very selective at the plate. He's still walking at a great rate. I closed his numbers. I don't have them up here, but I mean, you go look at Santana's numbers. He's still walking at his typical rate.
The thing about Santana, he has these stretches.
Right. I mean, you look at his BABIP right now. His BABIP is like 189 or something ridiculous like that.
Right.
Where you know a lot of it. You know, BABIP doesn't tell the whole story, but it does tell a lot of the story when you're putting good swings on the ball. You know, Santana's hitting the ball hard. A lot of them are just not finding the green.
Yeah. And he has these stretches, just like every hitter has these stretches. In Santana's case, you know, he did hit a home run back-to-back nights earlier in the week, so hopefully he's kind of coming out of it. But, like, you could see he was trying to pull everything. His swing was getting a little long, and he wasn't so disciplined there for, like, four or five games. But he's already started to kind of right the ship, because that's what he does. Just usually he has, you know, 300 at bats of 250 under his belt and a run of 50 or 60 bad plate appearances doesn't result in an average of, I don't know, whatever it was, like 150 or some ugly number. The worst problem is this defense. Right now they stink on defense. It is like a horror show. I mean, all you can do is joke about it. People on Twitter, that's what they're saying. I can't even deal with this anymore. I can't even analyze it. I'm going to write haikus about it. That's what was going on the other night during the game. People were writing haikus about the Indians' defense. And Garrett's laughing. Mark Shapiro, who, you know, was the Indians' GM, now he's their team president or whatever. So now he gets to decide like what healthcare plan everyone gets. he was quoted as saying that the defense is the most disturbing thing right now. This isn't an exact quote, but it was most disturbing because there's not much he can do about it. And he's right. Like, there's not, what are you going to do? Like, Yan Gomes is your catcher. Jason Kipnis is your second baseman. As Jamel Cabrera is playing shortstop and Nick Swisher is playing first, man. Like, Nick Swisher has played, like, I don't know, 10 or 12 seasons. He's never had a defensive stretch like this. There's times when you want to say, hey, Swish, bend over. If you bend over, the ball will go in your glove. And it's just like, there's nothing you can do. You just have, like, I mean, there's obviously some coaching. Like, Sandy Alomar, I'm sure, is working with Yan Gomes. But, like, they need to just forget about any other responsibilities for Sandy Alomar right now.
Yeah.
And fix, well, I don't know, Yan Gomes.
You guys should go check it out. I don't know if you saw it. I posted the other day on the Tri-State of Mind Facebook page an article that Mike Petriello, Fangraphs wrote. Did you happen to see that?
Oh, I saw it. It brought back flashbacks. It was like PTSD.
Oh, man. Jared, if you haven't seen this yet, go check it out on our Facebook. They have gifts of every position player on Cleveland. And the errors that they... I'm looking at the Jason Kipnis one right now, where he's, running back underneath the fly ball.
Now, I'd like to point something out. It's not every player. You know who's not on that GIF list?
Who is not on this list yet?
Carlos Santana.
Oh, no, he's on there.
Is he?
Yeah, he's on there at third base. Yeah, one skips right over his mitt.
Oh, well, but still... I think it's hilarious because that's all everyone talked about. So how bad is Carlos Santana going to be at third base? I got news for you. He isn't even approaching this problem. Like, if it's Mount Everest, like, he's still at base camp. He doesn't even factor into this. It's Swisher. Might as well go out there with a glove the size of a teacup. I mean, because if it doesn't hit him in the chest, he's not going to field it. And it's comical because I know first basemen, you know, a lot of times they get that hot shot right at them and they're often not the best fielder, but most of them knock it down. And since they're standing within 10 feet of the base, they can run over and get it and get the guy out. There's balls going by Swisher. Like, it's like he didn't even see him. It's like you want to say to some of these guys, hey, are you paying attention? Are you like drawing in the infield dirt with your cleat?
Picking dandelions in the outfield.
So, I don't know. That's my biggest thing right now.
So, let me ask you this, Jason. I'm kind of curious now. Is it? Do you think it's time to panic in Cleveland? If you're an Indians fan, are you in full-on panic mode right now?
I'm not in full-on panic mode, but it's definitely time to worry. Because even though the I can't talk all of a sudden. Even though the division is close, you can get buried quick. Like, if the Tigers start putting it together, which they kind of have because Miguel Cabrera is starting to hit a little, you can get buried. Just ask the Pirates because they're getting buried in the Central. And the Indians are, like, on the brink of that right now, you know, because if you get more than, like, 10 games down right out of the chute, you can come back from that, but it's really, really hard. And they were streaky last year. They had these streaks where they'd lose 5-6 games in a row, and then they'd rattle off like 8 wins in a row, and then they'd lose 5 games. They did it all the time. I mean, we could have a completely different conversation at this point next week, and hopefully we do, but I'm not panicked, but I'm worried. And what worries me is not the offense and not the pitching. What worries me is the defense. Because at this point, it's like a runaway train. And they all are like on the verge of getting the yips. Like, at this point, I don't think Yan Gomes wants to throw to second base. I think he just wants to lob it back to the pitcher and be like, you know what, I'll give you that one. But don't try third, because I might throw to third. I might.
But, it's like the anti-Rube Baker.
No, there's jokes about that on Twitter that, like, it's like Major League 2 is playing out in Cleveland right now. They had a good year last year, and right now they think that they're, like, too hot to trot. And I'm not saying they're going to do it right now, But do you remember when I said putting Jason Kipnis back in the outfield? I'm just throwing it out there. Because his defense has never been real great at second base. And you've got a legitimate defender in Jose Ramirez who doesn't have a place to play. I'm just throwing it out. I'm not saying they're going to do it in the middle of the season, but it's something to think about.
Yeah, Cleveland does have that benefit of having a ton of middle infielders down on their farm system, too. So you would think if they're going to plan on keeping those guys around, you're going to need somewhere for them to play at some point.
Right. Well, there's this talk of, like, is Jose Ramirez just trade bait, or are they going to come up with something here? But
I like that idea. I think Kipnis' bat plays well in a left field corner spot.
That's the thing. I think Kipnis, he does. He has the bat to play out there. And could you imagine a double play combination of Lindor and Ramirez?
Ooh, sexy.
See, and that's what was frustrating about this last week. Like, the Giants would hit a ball up the middle, and, like, Kipnis and Cabrera go diving past one another like it's, like, synchronized swimming. And... and like Cabrera hits a ball at the middle, and I don't know, whatever schmo the Giants are trotting out there, he's like one step to his left, picks it up and throws him out by like four steps, and you're like, oh man, like that's what a real defense looks like. But anyways, that's all I want to say about Cleveland. So Andy, tell us about the depths of despair in Pittsburgh, because it's not going real well there either. My wife thinks that both the Indians and Pirates seasons last year were a fluke. That's a quote.
I think we should get Stella to make a drop for us.
She said, we were at McDonald's, and I said to her, the Indians stink right now. And she said, yeah, the Pirates aren't much better, I guess. I guess it was all a fluke.
Yeah, can we get her to say that? Put it in every drop ever that we make? It was all a fluke. My dad probably is agreeing with that somewhere. He's going to listen to this and be like, yep.
That girl's right.
She knows what she's talking about.
Don't listen to these idiots. Get her on there.
So Pittsburgh, yeah, if it does make you feel any better, they're 10-16, about to be 10-17.
I was going to say, what's...
In about another three pitches or so.
Yeah.
Once they get this all sorted out, they're going to be 10-17. So the big thing that it kind of bothers me, and we talked about this at the end of last season, for kind of Pittsburgh and Cleveland, a lot of things went right last season. For Pittsburgh, it was the outstanding pitching. The bullpen and the starting pitching was phenomenal. So all off season long, if you were reading about the Pirates, all you had to read about was how much they overachieved. They were everybody's pick for the biggest regression candidate this season. And they won 94 games last year. It's hard to win 90 games in baseball. And that's a team that's coming off 19 consecutive losing seasons, so they don't have a great track record of success to begin with. So now we're talking about a team that absolutely overachieved with 94 wins. So, yeah, there's going to be some kind of regression. I don't think, I mean, if this play keeps up all season long, I think everybody's going to be shocked at how much regression there was by the end of the season. But you're looking at everything that's happened last season that's not happening this season. The bullpen shut everything down last season. This season, already 6 blown saves. You know, like they're putting these pitchers out there in these high leverage. Oh, there's the end of the game. 5-1 final. And you're putting all these relief pitchers out there in high stress situations where they're not having even a chance to succeed, really. And it just makes everything more difficult. With 13 one-run games already, I think we're 6-7 or 7-6 in those one-run games. So the stuff that was rolling our way last season, not rolling our way, you know, throughout the first 27 games this season. One of the biggest problems in Pittsburgh's lineup has been Starling Marte at the top of the order. You know, Clint Hurdle was all gung-ho about Marte at the top of the order last season, I think primarily because he was fueled by 26 or 28 hit-by-pitches, you know, that kind of made his on-base percentage palatable at the top of the lineup. Well, this season,
turns out he's not Craig Biggio.
Yeah, he's the exact you know, you're seeing that regression. You know, like I wrote an article about this at the beginning of the season, how Starling Marte needs to avoid the regression monster, and he's basically doing everything to not, you know, to not put off that regression.
He's falling into its clutches.
What's that?
He's falling into its clutches.
Yeah, I mean, he really is. Tonight, they finally bumped him down today to the seventh spot in the lineup. Clint Hurdle said to take some of the pressure off him. But I think when you're looking at your leadoff hitter, who's hitting 229, 308, 305, struck out in 31% of his plate appearances. He's leading baseball with 37 strikeouts. You just can't keep a guy like that at the top of the lineup. I mean, that's not to say that Marte has been totally worthless. I mean, he's still a super talented player. He's already stolen 7 bases, actually 9 now, and stole 2 more tonight, or in the first game of that doubleheader. He's only been caught 1. And that was one of the areas that we said that Marte could really improve his game last season. You know, he led, I think, all of baseball, the National League or all of baseball in caught stealing with 16 or 17. He's still playing great defense in the outfield. It's just his plate discipline has been awful. So when you're looking at those triple slash numbers, you're looking at those runs, you're looking at those RBI, he just wasn't getting on base enough to be productive in those categories that you're looking at. So, you know, today he got a 13-pitch at-bat in his second at-bat, took a walk, stole a base. You know, his first at-bat looked at 5 or 6 pitches before he singled. His third at-bat, he looked at 6 or 7 pitches before I think he ended up lining out or grounding out in one of his at-bats today. So, but it looks like moving him down 7th kind of got the point across, like, hey, we need you to be a little more selective because that OPS plus of 79 is kind of killing us in the leadoff spot.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate because in so many ways, plate discipline is it's a mindset. Like, yes, you have to have good hand-eye coordination and weight, but it's also going up with the idea of, okay, I'm not going to just hack at the first one that comes within a foot of the strike zone.
Right, yeah.
And the fact that, like, you send him down to the 7th spot and boom, he has a 13-pitch at bat.
Yeah, I don't think he's seen 13 pitches all season. He's got 13 pitches and 1 at bat.
But that's what I'm saying. It's kind of like, come on. This is evidence that you have this ability. You're just choosing to swing at whatever suits your fancy.
Right, yeah. So, I don't know. I think Marte has the talent. I'm not concerned about Marte other than the fact that he just didn't seem to want to be more selective. Or whether it was that or whether he was just so much in his head that, you know, he couldn't be more selective. You know, that he looked good today. That 13-pitch at bat, I didn't care what he did at the end of it. He saw 13 pitches. I don't know, pop up a bunt, I don't care. You saw 13 pitches in that at bat. That's great. That's progress. Speaking of anti-progress, though, Clint Hurdle, his lineup construction drives me nuts. I don't know how much you pay attention to the Pirates lineups. But
no, but I was wondering today as I listened to the first game of the doubleheader on the way home, why it went like McCutchen, Gabby Sanchez, and then Neil Walker.
Oh,
this
was our ongoing debate last season for most of the season. Like, I love Clint Hurdle. Clint Hurdle says all the right things. Like, that's cool. He seems like a super friendly guy. But his lineup construction is going to make me go insane. Yesterday his plan was, he ended up doing it today too. He put Ike Davis in the two hole. And this is as Clint Hurdle. Clint Hurdle says, Ike Davis can get on base for Andrew McCutchen. Okay. So this is our plan. We're moving Marte out of the top spot because he's not getting on base enough. Now we're looking at our number two hitter, our new number two hitter, Ike Davis, who has a career 334 on base percentage. Not bad. That's an okay on base percentage. Mm-hmm. You compare that to Neil Walker's on base percentage. Do you know what Neil Walker's career on-base percentage is, Jason?
It's probably close.
It is very close. 337 career on-base percentage. Yeah, just like last season, up and down. He'd hit Walker in the 2 spot, move him down to the 5 spot, move him down to the 6 spot. You wanna talk about someone else with a career on-base percentage that Hurdle would love? Gabby Sanchez, career 336 on-base percentage. And that's not when you're talking about his platoon splits where he's just swinging against lefty pitchers. I mean, Jose Tabata has a career 338 on base percentage. If you're talking about guys who can get on base,
but
of these guys get on base at the same clip as Ike Davis. I don't understand what Hurdle's trying to say with that mentality. You know, Ike Davis is the guy who gets on base from a cut. He does not get on base any more than any of these other guys.
But so then what does it matter?
What's that?
I mean, if they're all about the same.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And so then, I guess it doesn't really matter.
Somebody hitting in front of McCutcheon that gets on base, Russell Martin's career on base percentage is .349.
Yeah, but he's hurt.
Right. I mean, but, and he was slotting Martin in that two spot towards the beginning of the season. But there's a guy, like, if you're saying my goal is to put somebody in front of McCutcheon who gets on base, that should be Russell Martin all the time.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but he doesn't have that option. So who would you rather bat right now in the two spot?
I mean, I've been saying since last season, I think Walker's probably the guy you want in that two spot. He's one of the best hitters in your lineup. You probably want to filter him more at bat. And when you're looking at on-base percentage, it's really not, you know, like I said, it's a coin flip.
Right.
You know, unless for some reason you have a good matchup, you know, against the lefty where you're throwing Gabby out there and you want him, you know, getting that extra at bat. Hurdle, that kind of stuff does drive me nuts about Hurdle. Don't say that you want Ike Davis hitting in front of McCutcheon because he gets on base, because he doesn't get on base any better than any of those other guys. So we already kind of
getting worked up.
What's that?
Getting worked up.
Oh, it gets me fired up. That number two spot in the lineup has been just the bane of my existence these last 2 years. So moving on, we talked about the one-run games, 13 one-run games. Today was not a one-run game. So they're 7-6 in one-run games. When you're talking about other teams that they're playing, Pittsburgh's 4-9 against teams with a record over 500. 6-7 against teams with a record less than 500. They're not playing well against anybody. Pretty much the only team they get to beat up on now is the Cubs. You look at their numbers, they're walking more than they were last season at this point through
some
the season.
Them.
That's a good sign. You know, they're striking out at about the same rate. They're just not hitting the ball hard. Their ISO is isolated slugging percentage is 129. That's 10th worst in all of baseball.
Don't you think, though, at some point, like, the Pirates are just not built to be an offensive team? Like,
No, they're absolutely not.
What
that,
helped
you know,
them?
That kind of goes back to their problem last season, which was all of their games were 1-2-run games. They just weren't putting up offense last season.
That was what I was getting at, is, you know, what helped them overachieve last year is excellent starting pitching and a lockdown bullpen. Their hitting really is, it is what it is, you know, I mean. It's not good, but we really didn't expect too much more. The problem is that they're getting smoked. You know,
you look at
that.
You know, they have the third worst slugging in baseball. I mean, their offensive numbers are alarming. They need to improve their offense somehow. I mean, at some point, you just need to take a look at these guys and figure out who's in our long term plans and who's not. And that'll kind of touch on Gregory Polanco in a minute, which we'll get to, but. Before we get to that, their pitching, kind of like you've said, has been the real disappointing part of the season. You know, they lose A.J. Burnett, which we knew was going to affect their rotation. As a result of that, probably, you know, A.J. Burnett led the National League or all of baseball in strikeouts, definitely the National League last season in strikeouts, but Pittsburgh this season has basically 7.08 strikeouts per nine. That's the fifth worst in baseball. They're giving up over a home run a game, 1.05 home runs per nine. That's the ninth worst in baseball. Their ground ball rate is staying consistent. You know, they're still the best in the league with their ground ball rate, just under 50%. But their mistakes, when they leave the ball up in the zone, just get destroyed. Their home run to fly ball rate is 13.5. Which is the second highest in the league.
Missing poorly.
And get ready for this. Their pitching war, they are dead last in baseball with pitching wins above replacement at -110. They're awful. The Mets are the second worst team in baseball with a positive.
All right, so if it's been so hard to watch, I have a question for you, Andy. It may be described as leading the witness. Is there anyone in the minor leagues who might be able to help?
Oh, that you are leading the witness, aren't you? You really are. I like it. Yeah, there. It just so happens there is. His name's Stetson Alley.
No, he stinks.
He's in double.
Go ahead. You know what? Go ahead. Call him up because it'll just get this out of the way.
You would like that, wouldn't you?
It'll just end that. Just I can scratch it off my list.
So Gregory Polanco obviously has been one of the hottest topics in baseball right now. And, you know, we talked about this in depth last week, so I'm not going to dive too deep into it. But basically, Gregory Polanco is crushing the ball in AAA Indianapolis, and the general sentiment is he's being held back because of Super 2 status, which is basically it's an arbitrary date that occurs some point, you know, in June or July, where if you call up a player after the Super 2 cutoff, you save a year of arbitration. So, like, Pedro Alvarez was a Super 2 player. That's why he's receiving 4 years of arbitration instead of three. And in the long run, it's a purely financial move that would save the Pirates somewhere between $8 and $12 million in the arbitration process with Polanco.
Now, all right, so the people at home, thank you for the Super 2 explanation because it's kind of a mystery wrapped in a riddle. But I made my feelings clear on this last week, and I haven't changed my tune. In fact, I have only cemented my stance more.
It has strengthened your resolve.
Yes, this last week of Pirates baseball has strengthened my resolve. Now, last week, if you'll remember, I said, because, you know, in case the one person that listens had the microwave went off or something and they walked out of the room, I'll repeat that. My point was that this is, like you said, a purely financial decision. And I'm telling you, from an Indians standpoint, Indians fan standpoint, you have not built up enough goodwill after 20 straight losing seasons to have another stinker. Like, I'm telling you, this is how it starts. Before long, the plaint or the Tribune Review and the Post Gazette will be littered with "nutting is cheap" and all these other fools, and that's how it gets out of control. You cannot let this one slip away from you. And so if I'm Neil Huntington, I'm walking into Bob Nutting's office and I'm saying, "This team stinks right now. We don't have anybody worth a darn in right field. Here's a kid who can help, and the only reason you're not bringing him up is because you don't want to spend the scratch. And if he's good, we'll sign him to an extension anyways. He'll never even get to that fourth year of arbitration."
So let me ask you this. In your non-devil's advocate position...
I'm always in that position, but go ahead, try.
Try and think of this not as a devil's advocate. If you were a Pirates fan, or a Pirates general manager, let's say... would you call up Gregory Polanco right now? There's probably two different answers to that, depending on which answer or which position you're answering from. But would you want Polanco called up right now?
Yes. And I would, if I was Neil Huntington, I would too. That's literally what I would be having that conversation with Bob Nutting. I mean, you got to make this work because all the goodwill from last year, the big attendance mark, the filled seats, the Pirates pride, all the hashtags the kids are doing. That's all going to go away if we stink again. I'm telling you.
So dangerous when you say it that way, too, by the way. All the hashtags those kids are doing nowadays. Doing all these hashtags.
That's how they do it, man. They paint it that way. But I'm telling you,
can I play devil's advocate to your devil's advocate for a second?
Let me just say this. If he's good, you're going to sign him to an extension. If it's the fourth year of arbitration and he's not signed, things aren't going well. You know, either he's not panned out the way you hoped, or he's basically said, you know, "I don't really like Pittsburgh. The air is not as clean as they told me it would be. It's still kind of stinky, and I don't like coleslaw on my sandwiches."
So, hey, you will shut your foul mouth about Coleslaw sandwiches. They are delicious sandwiches.
I don't have a problem with it. I'm telling you, Gregory Polanco might say that.
Maybe he does. That would drive.
But my point is, if you know, you probably don't even have to worry about this magical fourth year of arbitration that everyone's so concerned about.
So let me play devil's advocate now to your devil's advocate. I'm reverse devil advocating you.
I'm ready.
What if this is purely and simply, and if you're taking Neil Huntington's words at face value,
I know what you're going to say.
Really, what if it is a baseball move?
No.
What if, like Starling Marte, who came up last season and put up good statistics by the end of the season, which were fueled probably by some unsustainable statistics like hit by pitches and things like that, but what if there are things that they really want Polanco to work on so as to avoid maybe some kind of statistical slide like Marte's experiencing this season? What if it is a baseball developmental type move? You know, Polanco, he is young.
I don't buy it.
You're looking at a guy who's 22 years old. You know, he's still very young by major league ages. No, you're not buying that?
That's the same kind of nonsense the Astros tried to use with George Springer and the Angels tried to use with Mike Trout.
But
is code for monetary monetary concerns.
Springer came up. Springer struggled out the gate.
Yeah, and you know what? And Gregory Polanco might struggle out of the gate too. But another 2 months in Indianapolis isn't going to do anything about it. And Gregory Polanco might have a sophomore slump. And I really don't think another 2 months in Indianapolis is going to solve that either. It's you got to get there and you got to realize how they're pitching you, and you either make those adjustments and you're successful at some level, either, you know, average or above, or you can, I mean, every major league player knows, like Yan Gomes right now knows that they're pitching him outside and he's not laying off of it. The problem is he can't adjust to it. And I mean, that's what makes or breaks a prospect. Cause you can't, they've never figured out, you know, how to reliably transport minor league stats to major league stats. If you could do that, we wouldn't have a podcast anymore. And so,
a very valid point.
But what I was saying about Gregory Polanco is that you're referencing the conversation where Neil Huntington turned into James Bond, and he said, "There's things that we want him to work on, but I'm not going to reveal them. Other teams may exploit them." I mean, if there's a problem, everyone knows about it because it's on tape. I mean, I can get the Indianapolis Indians games from my computer. So I don't buy it. The concern, what they want him to work on, is lowering his future earnings. That is what Neil Huntington would like Gregory Polanco to work on. Lowering the cost. The cost benefit analysis is like right at the edge. And if Gregory Polanco stays in the minors for like another month or so, the cost benefit analysis, it's like those win probability charts they do where it's like, oh, he got on second base and then the next batter struck out. It's like Gregory Polanco's hitting really good. The benefit's going up, but he's super two. So it's going back down. He's not super two anymore. Time to call him up. It will be like wham! As soon as that date passes, you can forget about Travis Snyder and his red face. You can forget Jose Tabata is only going to sniff the field when Starling Marte forgets how to take a few pitches. You there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I agree with what you're saying there.
So I won again.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't view this as like a win-loss thing, Jason. I view it as you made a very, very good point.
Oh, if I was a Pirates fan, I would be so burned up. I'd be more burned up about that than about Ike Davis in the two slot.
Listen, let me tell you, 20 years of losing, really, it sucks a lot out of you, man. It sucks a lot out of you.
I'm telling you, though, you were on the cusp.
Does not erase the apathy of 20 years of losing.
You were on the cusp of where the Indians were in 2008. They had a great season, one game from the World Series. They didn't do squadoosh in the offseason, and they came back. And by the trade deadline, CeCe Sabathia was gone. Victor Martinez was gone. Jake Westbrook was gone. It was like, okay, I guess that didn't work. We got to start over again.
And, oh, yeah. Depending on how this next...
And they are...
We may be having some good discussions on next week's podcast.
But what I'm saying is they are still trying to recover from that because that was, you know, the vaunted window of opportunity. That's not what they called it. Window of contention. And it was like the window went boom, boom, right back down. And all these Indians fans that for years were saying, like, just be patient, just be patient. We'll be good again. They're like, that was it? We waited all these years for 1 year? That's all we get? I would have bought more tickets. Or maybe I won't buy any. But okay. So, I guess I'm in charge of this podcast. So, it's time to move on to the Seawolves shout-out. Andy, we talked about Wandy's start in Erie today. It was a stinker. He went 3 1/3 innings, gave up 4 hits, 3 earned runs, 3 walks, and 3 Ks, and a home run for a spotty 8.10 ERA. Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Maybe Alan Hansen?
Ooh, Alan Hansen today.
Oh, but
you brought up,
I guess,
Mr. Alan Hansen.
Go ahead. We'll go to my thing.
Playing shortstop in his first home run of the season for the Curve today in the first game of that doubleheader.
Okay. And he hit a home run, right?
Gibson Gope, the defensive whiz, ranked by a lot of people in the baseball industry as the best defensive infielder in the minors, hit his second home run today. This is the second time around in Altoona. They gave him a little shot at it last season where he was just, you could tell he was just overwhelmed. But he hit his second home run of the season. And Willie Garcia slammed his fourth home run of the season. So it's nice to see his powers kind of transition into Double-A as well. So you basically have a whole, you know, Hansen was in Double-A at the end of last season, but you have Ngope moving up and Willie Garcia coming up. So you have this whole group of high guys making the transition from Bradenton to Double-A. And they seem to be making a solid transition from high A to Double-A. There's one name I want to bring up with you though, Jason, who went two for four today with 2 doubles, whose batting average currently sits around .270.
Is he
who's playing first base?
Is he a busted former pitcher who's like beating up some little kids at the playground?
It might be. It is Stetson Alley. Stetson Alley just killing it in Double-A, and I know it just burns your soul up on the inside every time he does. Every time he gets a hit, a little part of Jason dies on the inside. But, yeah, Stetson Alley, you know, hitting well. I haven't, because of graduate school consuming my life, had a chance to watch any minor league games this season.
No excuses.
For the Curve. But, you know, he's put up good numbers. He's hitting .260. You know,
he's hitting
the power's still there, which is good.
.260?
Yeah, yeah.
So that translates to what, like, 220 in the majors or something like that?
I think it translates to a solid .285 average.
Oh, really? His average goes up? He's a special kind of player. That's an alley. I see why the Pirates drafted him as a pitcher. Oh, wait.
The second game of the doubleheader today, though, Wade Gaynor, who was the player we talked about last week after our week-and-a-half-long absence, he hit one on top of the Erie Insurance Arena. Second game of the doubleheader today, Gaynor smashed 2 home runs.
So, be fair to say...
In the second inning and in the fifth inning.
Be fair to say he's gaining his power stroke. that was not even scripted. Ha! So, I want to throw in here for a minute that next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, up at the Akron Rubber Ducks are in town. So I'm going to go to at least one of those games. My father-in-law is wanting to go to one of those games. So we will be there. And as far as who's with the Rubber Ducks, there's a whole crew of awesome prospects with the Akron Rubber Ducks right now, including Francisco Lindor and Tyler Naquin and Tony Wolters and Giovanni Urshela and Kyle Crockett, who in 19 innings of relief in Double-A has yet to give up a run. And he was just drafted last year, so he's like flying up the Indian system. And there's plenty of other guys there, too, whose names are eluding me at this moment. But the Akron roster is full of really interesting guys, if Lindor is not enough for you. So go to the – it's a howl of a good time. See?
There he goes. It's so fun to say, isn't it?
Something like that. It's fun to say. Oh, I guess I have to finish. Are you done?
Yeah, man. I'm all done with the little shout-out. You got to wrap this puppy up.
Oh, well, let me find it here in the notes. Oh, here we go. Thank listeners. Okay. Well, for all you listeners out there, Dave and Carlisle, we're talking about you. We want to thank you for listening. Tell your friends. We think we're kind of funny and entertaining, and we'd like to get even more people listening. If you are listening, Dave and Carlisle, we ask you to review us on iTunes, because it would be good to drive our popularity up. Again, more listeners. There's a theme here. We want more people to listen. We'll be doing another podcast probably next week, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll be here.
Our team stinks, so there'll be a lot to talk about. If you are bored, go to our website, tsmbaseball.com. Andy claims he's going to be posting more because he's some kind of highfalutin book-learning graduate now. I've been posting a lot. If you're really bored, I put up a really hilarious photo essay today of what happens when you put Albert Bell and bicep into Google image search. If you have a question, you can email us at tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can send us the tweets or the hashtags that the kids are doing at TriStateBB. And you can Facebook us, that sounds odd, at facebook.com/TSMBaseball. So for Andy and Dr. Garrett, I'm Jason, and we'll see you next week.